Well, hello, welcome back, and it is, of course, Archaeology News Weekly. I am David Connolly. This news is brought to you, of course, in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website, alongside Past Horizons for news and views across the archaeology world. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. So, where are we this week? Well, the first piece of news is actually quite close to home, as we announced the release of ArchaeoNews, archaeology news in your pocket. Yes, because this is the first mobile application that brings news about the ancient world to your Apple iPhone, iPod and iPad. Through this news app, you can read all about the news published on Stone Pages website, as well as have access to this very MP3 podcast. Have you ever wondered what the exact location is of that obscure place mentioned on one of these articles? Well, now thanks to the app, you can actually see the point of origin for each article clearly shown on a Google map. Well, I would buy that right away. First, I'll have to actually buy an iPhone, though. But it is an amazing application. And where do you get it? Well, ArchaeoNews app is now available on Apple iTunes Store for an incredible 59p. That's only 99 cents. So well worth that investment. On to the news now. Well, we have exciting archaeological finds made on the first ever field walking workshop held to promote local heritage and distinctiveness, whatever that is, in the Eden area of Westmoreland in England. Residents of Orton and Tabey discovered new evidence dating to the time of the first farmers, showing the area significant as a transport route for at least 4,000 years. They unearthed stone tools made from flint from the Yorkshire Wolds in south of England, and also a volcanic glass called pitchstone, which originates from the island of Arran off the west coast of Scotland. The finds have added a new chapter to the heritage of the area, proving the area has been used as a route that even predates the Roman roads that run through it by thousands of years. Anthony Dixon, a lithic specialist from Oxford Archaeology North, has offered to help them identify and document their new finds. He's a prehistorian who specialises in the analysis and interpretation of stone tools. Spurred on by the exciting new finds, the Tabey and Orton volunteers now plan to set up an official archaeology group in association with a local history group to continue searching and, most importantly, recording sites and finds. Check out the website stonepages.com for the phone and email address of this group and to find out more about the project. If you're not caught up in all the home improvement programs out there, you're not alone, but it seems that humans have been at it for quite some time. New research has revealed that Neolithic people were proud of their houses and enjoyed a spot of DIY. Archaeologists have unearthed evidence that shows ancient people from about 5,000 years ago painted the insides of their Stone Age homes to brighten the places up. As well as decorating the stone walls, they also painted designs like chevrons and zigzags on the interior, using reds and yellows and orange pigments from ground minerals and bound with animal fat and eggs to make a paint. Archaeologists made the discovery at the site of a Stone Age settlement on the island of Orkney in Scotland. A Neolithic village consisting of 15 small dwellings was first discovered at Brodgar in Orkney in the 1980s. Several stones used to form the 5,000-year-old buildings were found to be painted and decorated. It's thought this was done to enhance entranceways or areas of the building that had particular significance. Normally, when you think of the Neolithic period, you think of a grey, monochrome world, but it's been long suspected that colour was part of this world. Paint pots have been found at various other sites before, but it was assumed that these were for personal adornment. Now we can see exactly how they were used to paint walls. Earthy colours were used like oranges, yellows and reddish-brown pigments. The paint will now be analysed, but it's thought to be made from a hematite mix. The painted stones themselves are about 1 metre wide and 10 centimetres thick. I have to confess, I never saw the Neolithic as a rather grey place, but maybe that's just me. Maybe I've just got a hopeful mind. In England, archaeologists have unearthed a collection of Bronze Age axe heads, spear tips and other 3,000-year-old metal objects buried in an Essex field. The items include an intact pottery container with heavy contents that have been removed undisturbed. The location was reported to archaeologists at Colchester and Ipswich Museum by a landowner and metal detector enthusiast. Three other hobbyists then came forward to report more finds in the same area, including the top of a pottery vessel. The materials are now at the local museum. The excavation at the Bronze Age site was filmed and the objects have been removed to allow archaeologists a chance to carry out studies. As the intact pot was so fragile and the contents so heavy, the decision was made to block lift the vessel and transport the entire contents to the museum laboratory for further study. The local finds liaison officer from the Portable Antiquities Scheme, Laura McLean, notes how rare it is to find a hoard still located in its Bronze Age context below the level of ploughed soil. Especially since in this case there's actually pottery involved. Having metal detectors and archaeologists working together is going to be absolutely crucial in uncovering and recording finds like this. In South Africa now, scientists working at the Blombos Cave believe they've found 75,000-year-old evidence of a sophisticated stone trimming technique called pressure flaking. If they're correct, it could mean that a complex human behaviour developed much earlier in Africa than was previously known. The findings seem to support the theory that the evolution of modern human behaviour occurred gradually over time. Until now, the oldest evidence for pressure flaking dated to around 18,000 BCE. The pressure flaking technique is used to finish the edges of a stone tool. Pressure is applied to the edge with a bone which forces off thin flakes from the surface. The process then leaves the characteristic narrow, even grooves along the sharp edge. The team also found tools made from silcrete, which is a softer, silica-rich mineral. These tools appear to have been fire-hardened before being subjected to the pressure flaking process. There's also evidence of attachment points for handles. The scientists attempted to duplicate the tool marks using pressure flaking on rocks found around the cave area. Unheated silcrete could not be pressure flaked, but when the mineral is heated, they were able to recreate the edges exactly as they were found on the ancient tools. John Shea, an archaeologist from Stony Brook University in New York, is known as an expert at making replicas of stone tools. He believes that the pressure flaking of obsidian tools developed 100,000 years ago in East Africa. According to Shea, pressure flaking does not improve the sharpness or strength of the tools, but it may have been used to communicate the toolmaker's skill and therefore status. Not everyone in the scientific community is in agreement about the interpretation of the finds, however. Curtis Marion from the Arizona State University calls it suggestive but not convincing. He believes that pressure flaking tools do not necessarily indicate a leap in human evolution, only that it is important because it extends the time range of the technique. He feels that it does not fundamentally change our understanding about the origins of complex cognition. Well, hopefully they'll be coming back at that one and we'll have another good academic fight on our hands. Scientists have examined the teeth of human remains found during an archaeological dig in Cirencester in East Gloucestershire. And they now believe the people were not local, but they had travelled from Devon or Cornwall in the southwest of the country in the early 1st century BCE. The human remains found during excavations 2 years ago at a housing development at Kingshill were both women. One is thought to have been of high status as she was buried with a cowhide and beaker in a small burial mound surrounded by a ditch. They were probably part of a settlement attracted to the rich farmland, which gave excellent feeding for livestock. Experts believe the settlement was abandoned when Roman Cirencester, or Corinium, was established as a town. The finds are still with Oxford Archaeology, but will eventually be displayed at the Corinium Museum in the new year. This is one of these fascinating stories because, in fact, there's actually a lot more to it than you would imagine. the idea that the woman had come from further away? Are we looking at links, family links? Are we looking at sort of how marriage is happening there? What was her status? Why was a cowhide important? All these things are coming in. And why did the settlement disappear? Did they all move, for example, into Corinium? Anyway, I'm asking questions, which I'm sure I'm not going to get any answers to, so we'll just continue on our way. Staying in England, we move to Silbury Hill, the Neolithic chalk mound in Wiltshire, Europe's largest prehistoric man-made feature. The ancient monument was believed to have taken many centuries to build, but recent research by English heritage archaeologists suggests the prehistoric site was made in 15 distinct layers over only 100 years. Their survey suggests the prehistoric mound is not, in fact, truly circular on the summit. In fact, it appears to be more angular than circular, whilst at the base, it's almost octagonal in form. It's possible a spiralling ledge led up to the mound. The finds have also shown that Silbury Hill was at the centre of a Roman-British settlement, or Romano-British settlement, I would say. It could have been considered as sacred in the Roman period. In fact, it was considered sacred when it was originally constructed, thousands of years previously. Later in the medieval period, the top of the hill was flattened, and a building, which was probably defensive, was constructed on the summit. New and more precise dating of materials found inside the hill suggests that the monument was created not in three stages, as previously suggested, but in 15 distinct phases, involving some three generations between 2400 and 2300 BCE, right after nearby Stonehenge's 30 enormous sarsen stones had been put in place. This evidence is telling us that the Neolithic people display an almost obsessive desire to constantly change and enhance a monument. Jim Leary, English heritage archaeologist, explained that most interpretations of Silbury Hill have, up until now, concentrated on its monumental size and its final shape. But increasing new evidence is telling us that the final form of the hill, in a way, did not matter. It was the construction process itself that was important. It seems as if the hill developed organically, and the strangest thing is that Silbury Hill hasn't always been a hill. The first phases were a bank and ditch enclosure, much like a henge monument. Silbury Hill has now been restored to as near its original condition as possible. All the known voids inside the prehistoric mound and the crater on the summit have been refilled. The hill is deemed a site of special scientific interest for chalk land vegetation, and so the public is no longer allowed to walk on it. Well, we had our chance. Now, in Armenia, things are going both well and, shall we say, not well at the same time. Several new finds have given scientists insight into life in Armenia during the Copper Age, between 6,000 and 3,500 years BCE. In the Arrhenia 1 cave, Pavel Avestanthian and his team from the Institute of Archaeology and Ethnography have uncovered the fragment of a reed skirt that may be 5,900 years old. It's in the same location where a 5,500-year-old leather shoe and a 5,900-year-old, wait for it, mummified goat were also found. The goat is at least 1,000 years older than any mummified animals found in Egypt. However, it should be pointed out that the mummification process in Egypt was a deliberate attempt to preserve bodies for the afterlife, while the mummification in the Armenian cave was a completely natural process. The goat remains will allow scientists to study the domestication of animals in ancient times. Another interesting find in Armenia is a funerary vessel containing adults and children, dating to 6,000 BCE. The children's bodies were originally placed in the jars intact, while the adults were dismembered. The remains of one of the children had a piece of well-preserved skin and hair, which may provide DNA for sequencing. However, the high cost of such a genetic analysis may be a problem for the scientific team, as it's often difficult for archaeologists to find the money. This, in fact, leads us to the question of requirement to ensure you've got the money there to deal with your post-excavation requirements. We have a responsibility. So, you know, before you do anything in the field, are you going to be able to cope with what you're going to find there? Now, in Bulgaria, archaeologist Boris Borisov and his team have discovered an 8,000-year-old home close to the village of Krum. Near the southern wall of this house, they found the skeleton of a young boy between 10 to 15 years of age, buried in a fetal position. The remains were found while land was being cleared for the construction of the Maritsa motorway en route to Turkey. The skeleton is most likely to end up in a museum, but its safe extraction from the grave will present a significant task. Although the teeth are reportedly in superb condition, the rest of the skeleton is in extremely brittle state and almost dissolves on touch. Anyway, tell me about it. After excavating some burials recently where the bones had actually dissolved, and actually it was only harder sand remaining in many cases, it was, shall we say, a joy, or should I say a challenge to excavate. Anyway, good luck to them. I know exactly what they're feeling. Now, moving to North America, for the last few weeks, a team of archaeologists has been gathering and collecting artifacts over the and along the banks of the St. Croix River behind the U.S. Customs port of entry in Forest City, Maine, in the USA. The team from Northeast Archaeology discovered a small encampment where a family had stopped over for a couple of nights. Stone tools and flakes from stone tool making have been found, as well as a graver, a tool used for making holes in bones and shells. The artifacts are from the Paleo-Indian period and they'll be analysed and a report produced. The site has already been determined to be eligible for the National Register of Historic Places and the artifacts will likely go to the Maine State Museum. Neolithic flint blades found in the interior of the Ternonagh dolmen at Maghera in Northern Ireland was likely left with the body of an individual who was buried there 5,500 years ago. Archaeologists excavating the ancient tomb claim it's the best find of the digs so far. As we already reported last April, the ancient tomb's massive capstone fell off, severely damaging one of the supporting stones. Now, the necessary repair works offered archaeologists from the Northern Ireland Environment Agency the chance of a lifetime to excavate the interior of this ancient burial monument. The 4.5 centimetre long and 1 centimetre wide knife blade is made from a translucent flint and suggested that the tomb was not excavated in the 18th century or 19th century by antiquarians who frequently looted the artefacts but rarely recorded or published their work. The DOE archaeologists working with the Centre for Archaeological Fieldwork at Queen's University in Belfast had hoped to find evidence of human burial, but soil conditions were such that they had caused any bones that were there to completely decay. They have, however, found several grave goods in excellent condition, including several types of flint tools, knives and scrapers. Pottery fragments dating from around 3.5 to 3600 BCE were also found. To Russia now. Archaeologists of the Chelyabinsk State University have unearthed an ancient megalithic complex in the Chelyabinsk region of Russia. According to researchers, it's the first find of its kind in South Ural steppes. Altogether, in the course of the survey trip, they managed to find around 30 previously unknown archaeological monuments. The expedition found a large number of archaeological sites, including burial grounds, settlements, avenues and menhirs, and ritual complexes. All of them will be registered and taken under the state protection. Near the Snezhny settlement, the archaeologists found a burial ground consisting of barrows from several different periods. And another area, archaeologists came across a Bronze Age settlement where they also found stone tools and ceramics, as well as two more avenues of standing stones. Not far from Anetsky, they found yet another complex of standing stones. It consists of a central upright stone over 2 meters tall, surrounded by recumbent granite slabs and several larger stones orientated on the cardinal points. Well, that is truly fascinating. Again, it just goes to you to show that in Russia and in China is an awful lot of archaeology still to be found, recorded and protected. Moving to the Sun of Cyprus, and boy could I do with some sun just now. The early prehistory of human civilization may end up being rewritten by archaeologists from Cornell University who've uncovered evidence that hunter-gatherers began to form agricultural settlements on the island half a millennium earlier than previously believed. Students began with a pedestrian survey of promising sites in 2005 and have since assisted with fieldwork on Cyprus led by the Professor of Classics, Sturt Manning, Director of Cornell's Archaeology Programme, on a project called Elaborating the Early Neolithic of Cyprus. The group found this new site by focusing their search in central Cyprus, near the only permanent river there, as this would have been a perfect place for a hunter-gatherer camp. The site produced a lot of evidence of stone tool production, and during seasons of fieldwork from 2007 to 2009, the team excavated several hundred square metres of the site, and intensive surveys were also conducted in the surrounding area. Six different charcoal samples from the excavations were carbon dated and estimated to be from the PPNA, or the pre-pottery Neolithic A period, the initial phase of the Near Eastern Neolithic. These dates came out to be almost 9,000 BCE, which puts them around half a millennium earlier than any other Neolithic site that had ever been recognised and dated on the island of Cyprus. More dramatically, these dates mean that Cyprus, an island only 80 kilometres off the Levant coast, was involved in very early Neolithic world, and thus long-distance sea travel and maritime communication must now be actively factored into discussions of how the Neolithic developed and spread. And finally, yet another prehistory may be changed forever story. An international team of researchers has discovered well-dated human fossils in southern China that changes perceptions of the emergence of modern humans in the Eastern Old World. The discovery of early modern human fossils remains at least 100,000 years old in the Jiren Cave of southern China provides evidence for the emergence of modern humans in East in Asia, at least 60,000 years prior to previously known modern humans in the region. The Jiarendong fossils, a chin and related teeth, have a mixture of modern and archaic features that contrast with early modern humans found in East Africa and Southwest Asia. This find indicates that the spread of modern human biology long preceded the cultural and technological innovations of the Upper Paleolithic, and the early modern humans coexisted for many tens of millennia with late archaic humans further north and west across Eurasia. Popular theory states that Homo sapiens migrated out of Africa about 60,000 years ago, at which point modern humans quickly replaced early human species, such as Homo erectus and Homo neanderthalus, across the world. The find of such an ancient example of modern human in China drastically alters this timeline for human migration. It may also mean that modern humans in China were mingling, possibly even interbreeding, with other human species for 50 or 60,000 years. These new findings mean that there was mating not just between these archaic and modern groups. Across Asia, and not just in Europe and the remainder of Africa. In addition, the find seems to suggest that anatomically modern humans had arrived in China long before the species began acting human. For example, symbolic thought is a distinctive human trait that involves using things such as beads and drawings to represent objects, people and events. The first strong evidence for this trait doesn't appear in the archaeological record in China until 30,000 years ago. To date, genetic evidence largely supports the traditional timing of the out-of-Africa theory, but the newly described Chinese jawbone presents a strong challenge. This is coming from anthropologist Christopher Bay of the University of Hawaii, who was not associated with the find, claiming that there is, of course, solid dates and evidence of basically a modern human. And John Hawks of the University of Wisconsin, also not involved in the find, remarks that if these dates do in fact hold up, and he does not think they are correct, they will have to reevaluate the whole human migration timeline. Anyway, don't forget, one more time, that our news is now available on the iPhone, iPod, Touch and iPad. Get along to www.stonepages.com/app to find out more about that. And of course, how can you miss the new and improved Past Horizons site, www.pasthorizons.com. It is awash with news stories, articles, projects that you can get involved in, videos, and of course, our world-beating archaeology tool store. Thank you so much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you return to us again next next week.